my ribs are wooden and full of lost water. My ribs are wooden. Step inside, step inside. I'm the tower of the water, of the water, of the water. You are the water. I'm the tower, I'm the tower of the
And this is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Greene, and Columbia counties in New York. And we're broadcasting locally on 90.7 FM and globally online at WGXC.org. This is the Art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Chad Weckler. And today's program for the next hour, we're going to be talking installation and performance art. And I have three wonderful Hudson Valley artists here in the studio, and they are Michael Aspill, Ryder Cooley, and Matthew Slatz, and they're all from the Hudson Valley, from north, south, east, and west of the river. So I'm really happy to have them here. And since Ryder, I'm going to go to you, since we just played from Fall Harbor, mm-hmm. Water Tower. Can you just give us a little information about Fall Harbor and that song?
Mm-hmm. Fall Harbor was a collaboration with myself and Todd Chandler. I played accordion and singing saw, and he played banjo. And he moved to Brooklyn, so we met in grad school in Troy, New York, but we haven't been playing lately. But that song I actually wrote because he was working on a film project that was partly set at a water tower in the woods. Mm. And so it was a song that was kind of inspired by his movie, which we were both performing in. And it was kind of a song about this character who lived in this water tower in the woods.
And, you know, as we were talking a little bit before the show, being all three of you installation / performance artists, it's very hard, I think, for you to field a question as to what do you do exactly? And I'll, Ryder, since I have you right now, what do you do?
Well, I'm a maximalist artist. I'm interdisciplinary. I like to work in a lot of different mediums and bring them together to create worlds that viewers can kind of enter into. So I like to work with narrative. I love to work with light and projected imagery. I love working with architecture and spaces. I think I like working also live with performance, and I just like to bring things to life, really, things from my mind mixed in with things from the world and history. And so, yeah, it all just comes together using different forms. And then my work is brought to life by me performing within it. And it's also brought to life by all the viewers who come in to experience it. They become performers in my work. Everyone enters in and becomes part of it.
And is that the same for you, Michael?
Maybe. I love the idea of being a maximalist. That's really great.
I like that.
I'm more of an installation artist. There's a lot of performative elements to what I do. Typically, it's much more private. Nobody ever gets to see that part of the process. Mm. They just see the end result. I do quite a lot of public artwork, commissioned works that are site-specific and community-specific. And I also do quite a bit of community-oriented type of artwork. Mm. I guess for me, it's hard to sort of like figure out where the sort of like art boundary and, for lack of a better way of putting it, life boundary sort of exists. Mm. But that's kind of where I find myself working, is in that kind of gray area a little bit. In addition to the sort of more gallery-oriented type of sort of installation things I do, I also am involved with a gallery in Kingston. I'm one of the co-directors there, and we try to bring in as much interesting and sort of, again, for lack of a better term, edgier stuff that has a harder time finding a home in the Hudson Valley. I'm also involved with an intentional community in Accord where I live, where we're all about sustainable living and the arts, and that's called Metacamp, by the way. And then kind of the third prong is the Hudson Valley Seed Library, which is something else I'm really involved in, which I consider part of my art practice as well.
And what is the Seed Library?
The Hudson Valley Seed Library is a beautiful thing. It's a farm where seeds are being grown, and they're all heirloom Hudson Valley cultivars, and they're being packaged and shipped all over the place. But what I'm specifically involved in is the art packaging for the seeds. We have this great project, which is really the brainchild of Ken Green, who's one of the founders of the Seed Library. And like a lot of really great artworks, what this is it's like an artwork that's a platform for other artists to sort of do their thing. Another example of that is what our friend Simon Draper does. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of created this sort of beautiful, again, platform, you know, these seed packs that artists sort of design the covers for. And then he finds really exciting, or I find really exciting, interesting ways of sort of distributing those seeds and making them known to the public and getting the artists some recognition and helping them sort of like talk to the general public.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks.
And I'll introduce Matthew. Actually, Matthew and I met about 4 years ago. We were both participating with the New York Foundation for the Arts inaugural MARC program.
Yeah.
In fact, Michael was a 2010 MARC out of Rosendale, mm-hmm. I believe, and just to sort of fulfill the whole NYFA circle here, Ryder got a SOS stipend from NYFA.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten a few stipends. Those have really gotten me by in some projects.
Keeps us artists going.
Yeah, yeah. NYFA is this amazing organization. So I'm even a fiscally sponsored artist for them, which is
through ArtSpire.
Yeah, it's they provide so much support for, especially for me. Kind of I don't make objects. I kind of make experiences. Mm. For me, like the type of art that I make is really about. I know there's these terms like post studio and post discipline and. For me, kind of going and building on what Michael said, it's like it's more about like kind of a life experience and trying to facilitate alternative ways of seeing cities and people and giving accessibility to voices that are kind of underrepresented And if you can use the term like social practice, I guess if that's one of the terms you could use to kind of define what I do. But
well, you mentioned being fiscally sponsored by ArtSpire. That's PAWS.
Yeah.
And could you explain PAWS?
So PAWS it stands for People, Art, and Urban Space Exchange. It's a nonprofit organization that I'm just getting off the ground in Poughkeepsie. But it really looks to kind of to provide a way of cultural production and art production that's not centered on tourism or kind of an economic model. It really looks at, you know, using art as an activator for the community and trying to invest in the community instead of trying to extract capital or whatever out of the community. So PAWS has been facilitating projects. So like one of the projects that we've been working on as of late is a collaboration with Clearwater and the Urban Landscape Lab, and which is part of Columbia University. And we've been developing a master plan for this creek that runs through Poughkeepsie, which is continually polluted and forgotten. And so we're like redesigning green spaces and designing events and opportunities for the community to kind of take ownership of that space again. And just trying to get an awareness of the environment back into an urban space in some way or another. So and then we also just invite artists into the community to kind of engage residents. We had an artist, Karen Brumman, another NYFA MARC artist from the initial year, who she and I worked with a teacher at in a fourth grade class at Governor Clinton Elementary, where Karen had been doing these installations where she projected images of the space back onto the space, if that kind of makes sense. But she took a photo of a brick wall, and then the students created like a drawing sheet where they colored in those, and then she reprojected them onto that space. So just kind of rethinking kind of decaying neighborhoods in a lot of ways. So that's in a small gist, that's what PAWS is trying to do.
All three of you have some kind of community aspect to what you do. And, you know, I'm kind of curious as to what are some of the challenges that each of you do or have in your projects. And Ryder, you do many different things besides singing, playing an instrument. I've seen you on a trapeze. You've done a lot of things. What are some of the challenges that are good and some of that aren't so good that you've experienced?
In terms of working with, like, collaboratively or with communities specifically, or just is that a more?
I'll leave it open.
Okay. Well, I mean, one of my biggest challenges lately is just, like, how to sort of survive and make a living. Just because I've been doing the kind of scrappy artist thing for quite a while, and it's worn me down over the years. So that's like the biggest thing I'm trying to figure out. I know how to make art. I know how to make music. I know how to do installations and performances, but it's like how I don't know how to do like the practical things that everybody else figured out a long time ago, because I was like a romantic, and I was like, I'm not going to deal with any of that. I'm just going to do what I believe in, and I'm really good at doing what I believe in.
But well, that's good.
I think that's a challenge. I mean, collaborations, I think it, like, things shift once you've been making work for a while, and you've kind of like done a lot of stuff, and the kind of thrill of the new is over too, so that it becomes harder to just sustain everything. I think, I mean, you guys are talking about sustainability. It's like, how do you sustain the life of the artist, you know, after you've been doing it for like 20 years. So yeah, I'm trying to figure out some sustainability situation for myself.
Well, Michael, you've been through the MARC program, which is a professional development program for artists. What would be some of the suggestions you would have for for a writer for sustainability as an artist?
Wow. I'm afraid to answer that.
It's all on you, Michael.
I mean, the NIFA Mark program is like incredibly valuable and really provides you with some remarkable sort of like tools in terms of managing your career. But I have to say, regardless of the fact that I've been trying to take advantage of those tools for the past year and a half, nothing to say bad about NIFA Mark. I still haven't sort of like cracked that code or anything. Yeah. And if it makes you feel any better, mm-hmm. I know what you were saying made me feel better. I haven't figured it out. I just keep plugging away as well, just in a whole different manner. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that my day job is the Seed Library. And I feel just fantastic about that. And the Seed Library happens to be on the property where I live. And so my life has become sort of like beautifully integrated. That's so wonderful. If I had any advice, it would just be like find a way to integrate all those things and live right in the middle of it. But I don't think I do. I think if anything, I'd be asking Ryder for advice. So, you know, maybe I'll pass it on to Matt if he's got anything else to add to that.
Well, I mean, I think going to Matt's a good idea. And all three of you, because of what you do, you balance many different things and organizing and having the discipline to keep track of all the different things that you do. And Matthew also does a radio program at Vassar in Poughkeepsie. My goodness, Matthew, how do you do all these things?
I don't know. I have a great family. I have to thank my wife for allowing me to escape when I can and run off to do these various things that I do. It's the rat race. A friend of mine, this really great artist, Eve Mosier, who does these really great projects down in Brooklyn, she just sent an email out a few weeks ago saying that she's taking a year off. She's like, I'm going to take a year off. I'm not going to do that rat race anymore. Mm. Like, I'm just going to, like, just let my art not focus on getting the grants and running around and talking to people and just, like, just let it. That sounds so nice right now, just taking that break. I'll say for me, I've never been the type of person that I don't make work that sells or can make me a living. Mm. So I've said, okay, I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just not going to deal with that. So then I have to look for grants and I have to build coalitions of people. Mm. I mean, Michael, before we got in air, said something about making work that takes all this effort and time. And I remember doing installations and just feeling so exhausted when they were done because there's so much work to do by yourself. And so I realized that I had to get people to help me. And I like collaborating with people. I think, you know, I'm really process driven. Mm. The outcomes are not what I care about. It's about going through this process with a group of people. So I have been like building coalitions of relationships, and those help me sustain what I'm doing, even if it's not a financial thing. I mean, so much of that is just about supporting like the emotional sense of all the work and the toll that the time and effort takes. And it's when a friend comes up and he says, yeah, that's really great, I really enjoyed that, mm-hmm. like that makes it worth a while for me to pursue. So and then it's just, you know, just continuing to send things out, and you know, you hope for the bite, someone bites on something, and you send things out. I actually just received a NISCA grant, which is great, but I sent it out 10 months ago, and it was like, what did I write about? What did I actually apply for? So it's just you just keep doing it and doing it and doing it, and hopefully, you see some success, and success breeds success. So, but it's a lot of work.
Well, is the so-called social network part of all three of yours the way that you get your work out or the word out, or is it person to person? Is it tangible in a sense of, is it a flyer? Is it Ryder, you're putting together, you're going to be performing this Sunday at Silver Mine, is that correct? Mm-hmm. That project, because I have a hard time pronouncing the name mm-hmm. of your project, and I'll be asking you to do that and also explain this project, because it's been happening over a long period of time and seems to have a real life.
It does have a life, which is great. As I mentioned before, that's what I like to do, is make things come to life. So Ex Mahlia is alive. Mm. It's about death. It's about extinction. So it's kind of like a dark cabaret musical performance about extinction, but it's very alive. Mm. And it's coming up in Silvermine Arts in Connecticut on Sunday, and then also in North Adams at MCLA Presents later in January, on January 25th. And I'll say there's an amazing community of artists that I've met in North Adams, and I actually, the Silvermine Connecticut show came out of North Adams. I've done a lot of projects there. They have this amazing program at MCLA, which is Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, where there's an arts administration program. There's also a fine arts and an arts program at the school, but there's this arts administration program, and then there's this gallery, and they kind of have the students running the gallery, and they also have students helping with this presentation series, and then they bring artists in, and you work with, you get to do a show, like a gallery show or a performance or both, and you work with the students, and the students work with you, and it just feels great. And they have been inviting me back for years, and it is this community, and so many things have come out of that. And
listeners could also see some of this work that you've already performed on YouTube, and
so you can see it on. Well, I haven't put it on YouTube. I don't know if anybody else has.
I've seen
you can see it on YouTube, or through my website or my blog, or I put it up on Vimeo. But I would recommend coming to something live. I know some folks prefer experiencing things through the computer, but my work is much more about the live happening.
Since you brought up the North Adams, I took this off a NEA newsletter today, which was that came through the Berkshire Creative website. 2.5 million people come to the Western Mass region annually. 2.5 million people, mostly during the summer, and almost 60% of them attend performing arts productions.
Yeah, it's on fire.
I really consider sort of the Berkshires and the Hudson Valley as brothers and sisters in our family of artists.
Mm-hmm.
And Poughkeepsie, what's it like in Poughkeepsie, Matthew?
People might disagree with me, but I have used the word black hole to describe it. It's just a town that really can't sustain a gallery, because there's really not an audience for purchasing art. There have been things popping up, though. There's a new little center called the Mid-Hudson Heritage Center that just started. It's funny because someone opens a door and opens a little space up, and all of a sudden things start happening at it. So there was a void there that is now kind of being filled. There's the usual things that are going on in Poughkeepsie with the Bardavon and Vassar and some things at Marist and whatnot. I've been involved in some revitalization efforts along Main Street, so we've been organizing some events kind of along Main Street, and Pause is kind of helping to kind of take that off Main Street and get into some other areas in the city that, you know, could really use some attention. So I wouldn't say there's a lot going on. I mean, it's like this, it's always this city of potential, right? I always feel like people are talking about Poughkeepsie as a potential, or even Newburgh is very much the same way. It's potential, or Kingston maybe, I don't know, maybe a few years, like 10 years ago, right? So there's a lot of potential there. It's just a matter of kind of grabbing onto the assets that are there and kind of building on them. So,
well, Michael, when you do an installation, what do you need to make something happen that satisfies you?
Wow. It's typically for an installation comes out of stuff that's around me. For example, when I first moved to the Hudson Valley, you know, I'm always just sort of like rummaging in all of the area. I lived right next to a hydroelectric plant. And I was just like, wow, okay, that's cool. I can deal with. So I started just sort of like rummaging around that area. And it turns out it's a really popular local fishing spot, which is shocking because it looks like the most polluted place you've ever seen. And because it's this big, huge eddy, you know, the floods come, it leaves like a bathtub ring of every bit of garbage that's been washed downstream. So it was like shocking at some level. But also kind of stunning. And on the far end of this, I found a place where the road crews dump all the deer carcasses. And they dump them at the top of the hill, and they throw some sawdust or something on them or whatever vegetation they had sort of like hacked up that day and throw it on top of the deer, and they'd roll down this incline toward the river, and as they do so they decompose, and by the time they got to the bottom of the hill it's just all bones. So I started collecting the bones and collected, I don't know, probably 10 or 20,000 bones. Wow. And then started reassembling them from the random parts, putting together and killed on the highway. So that's the, you know, so there was a performative act for me. I was out there sort of collecting and looking around and experimenting and rooting around my bizarre little world. And then finding a way to sort of like bring this mostly morbid thing sort of like back to life. And that in itself was just an incredibly rewarding experience. You know, how do I put a deer together? The pieces kind of fit, but then there's a lot of sort of like soft tissue that you can't figure out how to sort of like, you know, how does that go? So you start looking online and you find some guy in Alaska who's devised his own sort of like manual for reconstructing moose. So he can do it with high school kids, and you talk to him on the phone and you buy his manual, and you start putting deer together and like, well, how am I going to make a move? So, you know, so that's the kind of thing that really gets me excited when I'm doing that kind of work. Again, it's kind of like multi-pronged, you know, I'm sort of like working in a number of ways, but that's very, very rewarding.
Well, if I were to ask you to switch places with me and I'm you and you are me, what are you looking at of what I created? Or you created?
You mean I'm look? I'm you? I'm Chad.
Yeah.
Looking at Michael's work.
Absolutely.
Okay.
What are you looking at, and what are you experiencing?
Well, hopefully, what I'm experiencing first off is something that's very clear. Okay, there's a herd of deer. They've been. I'm just going with that example. I hope that's okay.
That's
since
fine.
I've already set it out. There's a herd of deer, and it's kind of obvious that they're a little dirty. They're hanging by a bunch of pieces of little bits of metal and string, and they kind of move around.
Are we
like
in a
little
field?
Marionettes. No, you're actually in a gallery in this instance. They haven't been installed in a field yet. That's in the future, perhaps. but you're recognizing there that something has been reconstructed, and it feels like sort of like a natural history museum type of experience, but maybe done in somebody's garage, so you're not exactly sure sort of what to make of that. And you begin to ask yourself questions, at least my version of Chad does.
Good.
hopefully that kind of like leads you to questions about, you know, maybe as far afield this way as like, wow, what happens to all this roadkill and, you know, all of these animals? And boy, what does it take to sort of like put together an animal like that once it's been sort of like pulled apart? And what kind of place was this guy rooting around in? You know, why would he spend any time there? I think that it just opens up sort of the floodgates of questions. But hopefully the first thing you're sort of like seeing is something that feels familiar, like a natural history exhibit, like a dinosaur at the Natural History Museum, only a little weirder, a little tweaked, and you're like, okay, I got to get to the bottom of that.
It almost sounds like if I could, I would put Michael Ryder and Sarah Faulkner in the same space to work together to create something writer.
That would be great.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
You get us the space.
and a grant if you
could.
I'll do my best. I mean, in some ways, Matthew and I are sort of advocates for the arts and the artists. And, you know, as an artist myself, I like to see other artists do well or do the very best they can. And sometimes, certainly, I never feel as if I'm keeping secrets. I don't, as an artist, I have no secrets. If I'm not right for the job and I think one of you are, I'm going to recommend you, even though I might, so I don't get the job, but you do. At least someone gets the work and gets the performance space. And is performance spaces difficult to obtain?
Not to hog the mic, but I think yes.
I think, you know, it depends what kind of performance work you want to do. It seems like it's really tricky to do installation and performance, which is my favorite thing to do. And that's kind of why over the last few years I've been making more stage shows that can go into like an experimental theater space. I think ultimately my ultimate thing is like make an installation and then perform a durational piece within it. But yeah, that's tricky to set up. And it's like shocking, but a lot of art spaces that do either performance or installation are still like, well, you need to do an installation in the gallery or a performance in the theater. And it's like, oh, come on, you know, like Ann Hamilton was putting this stuff together, combining this like 20, 30 years ago. And this is still like an issue, but I guess institutions, walls are easier.
It's hard to collect.
To build or then take down, maybe. I don't know.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to The Art of the Hudson Valley at WGXC.org. And we're talking to Ryder Cooley and Michael Aspill and Matthew Slatz. And Matthew, you use outdoors, indoors, nighttime, daytime to do what you do. What's one of your favorite things that you've been working on?
Oh, I mean, I can't pick, almost can't pick one. Like, I think it's been, that's what's been great about the last year or so is that, you know, for being a young artist, you're like, oh, opportunities, and you kind of, you're like, you'll say yes to anything. And now I've said yes to so many things, and they're all so great. It's hard to really pick.
Can I ask you to describe the Hyde Park drive-in experience?
So, yeah, this is one of the best examples of the work that I do. I'm very interested in media. And so at the time I had been working actually at Vassar College in the Visual Resources Library, and I just became really interested in images. I don't know, not that I've always been kind of interested in images, and I've never been a photographer, but interested in images and the meaning behind images. So for 2 years, I lived in Hyde Park. So for 2 years, I worked with the community just to gather snapshots of life in Hyde Park, and that was the like the framework or the parameter I put around. Like the photo had to be taken in Hyde Park, and so I went to farmers markets. I did workshops about digitizing your old photos. I went to meetings all throughout the community and just tried to say, you know, I'm looking for images. Can you provide some images? And the Historical Society, which is a tiny little historical society, was actually really great. And the library was a very huge help. And I actually helped them digitize some of their collections that they had. But over time, gathered probably about 3,000 or 4,000 photos that I now have on a few discs. And then the idea was to take those images and kind of project them back into the environments they came from. So like the best example was that a woman had some film of her parents' wedding in 1952. And she now lives in the house that her parents built at right after that wedding. So what I did is I took the film of that wedding and I projected it back onto the house. So there's like these relationships with the understanding of the people and the place and then the rule of the built environment. And all that all culminated in a larger project, which took place at the Hyde Park Drive-In on Route 9, where we took the entire collection and created some software that projected it based on how people were moving through the drive-in. Mm. And then we used radio transmission. So as you walked out, cars were parked throughout the space with their windows rolled down and their radios on. And so you kind of pick up radio signals as you move through. Again, trying to get at this point at, like, here's the physical space, here is the people that are engaging that space, and here is this photography and this audio that's kind of giving a context to it, and like a really complex understanding of the city as a whole. So like, those are the types of installations that I tend to build. A few months ago, I did a project at Rural Projects, another NYFA Mark, two NYFA Mark grads, Sarah Anderson Locke and Greg Locke. They run this really great space, just some property that they own. And Greg happens to be British and a big cricket fan, and I just happen to like cricket for some odd reason. And so we built a cricket pitch up in his woods, and I did this project called Contested Spaces. So you had this like manicured strip of grass, and we kitted out, like we drew, put our whites on, and we got cricket bats and had some friends. We played a game of cricket in the woods, playing on ideas of like how spaces and culture interact and whatnot. So those are the type of projects that I've been doing. A lot of really focusing on this kind of relationship that people have with where they live and our connection to the environment and the landscape in a lot of ways. So,
Michael, and you seem to be of the three, the one that, maybe I'm presumptuous, but who does projects more contained? I mean, you work with, wasn't one project you did salvage? Speaking of animal parts, and you like found objects, and you, I mean, when you put these together, do you work in a contained environment?
To some degree. I mean, I spend some time in my studio, although it's I don't think it's a home for me the way it is a lot of other artists. Hmm. It's like I get an idea, I start to explore it, you know, and typically outside the studio, but eventually it leads me back to a space where I have to do whatever constructive part of the project needs to happen. I don't want to just throw another example at you, but
go ahead.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Am I chat again?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. A recent project is there's a pool. I live in an old abandoned Ukrainian kids camp. We got it with some friends. This is the basis of the intentional community I live in, and there's an abandoned swimming pool there. And it's stunning. I mean, it's just a gorgeous thing. So I knew I wanted to do something with it. It was taking me forever to figure out what it was. But I started photographing it 8 inches by 8 inches at a time. I would just go out and I'd built this little device so I could sort of set the camera up and I didn't have to change the focus, and I could just click, click. So I'd grid out the pool and I would start photographing it. And little by little, I mapped out the pool. So for an installation, I didn't have that much space in this particular setting, but I took, and what I did is I printed out each one of those sections, I put them all back together, and I hung the whole thing upside down as if it were kind of a section of sky or just a giant map sort of like surrounding you, a paper map. So, you know, that required quite a lot of time in the studio. I was in front of the computer for a lot of the time, but I was also outside in the pool with my camera shooting a lot of the time.
I have a question about that project.
Sure.
Did you learn anything special about the pool?
Yeah. I mean, I actually learned a whole bunch of things because I don't really stop at that point either. I'm a pretty hungry researcher. Mm-hmm. Sure, I learned all kinds of things about decay and erosion. It's amazing how the surface of the pool looks like the surface of the planet shot from, or you know, like those maps that you see where it's a topographic map, but it's the ocean part. So they've painted it blue for some sort of random reason, so you know that it's the ocean part, but it's a topographic thing. It's mountains and what have you. It looks like that. So it was kind of exquisite to see landforms happening in chipped paint and what have you. But I also learned a whole bunch of other stuff. By some total coincidence, someone came to sort of like visit our property because they used to go to camp there when they were a kid. Mm-hmm. And they brought with them photographs. And several of these photographs were of them swimming in the pool with their mom. Mm. It turns out that this guy was a friend of a friend who I had worked with at a job in Woodstock a couple of years. Anyway, it's crazy the coincidences. I continue to learn things about the pool. I guess that wasn't the best way of saying what I learned about the pool, but it's amazing.
I was really looking for ghost stories.
I'm actually, that's the future as far as I'm concerned. I am absolutely obsessed with ghosts and ghost stories. I watch religiously. I don't have TV, but I get the DVDs after it's come out. You know, these like ridiculous sort of ghost shows on TV. Mm-hmm. I can't get enough of them. And I feel like there has to be some work made. Maybe that's the collaboration Chad's talking about. I think ghosts are... Something has to happen with ghosts, electro voice phenomenon and all that kind of good stuff. I think there's some definitely artwork that could be done around
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we might go to another song that we have that Ryder did. We're going to cue that up and maybe afterwards Ryder can talk a little bit more about the creation of the song, which is called Flying.
Mm-hmm.
Was this done by also Fall Harbor?
Yeah, I did play it with Fall Harbor. I also played it. I've played it in a number of different contexts. I actually first made the song when I was in North Adams, to get back to North Adams. Like, I was making a performance that was happening under this bridge. So when I hear the song, I still picture this bridge that I performed under 2 years in a row. And then my friend Ven was the first one to play the song with me. And then I kept working on the song. And then Fall Harbor came together and Fall Harbor played it. So this is the Fall Harbor version. And then we used it in a stage show on Amalia, which I did. So it's had a lot of different lives.
Well, that's wonderful. And I will have that queued up right now.
We are flying. we will fly. We will fly below the road, below the road. We will fathom, we will fathom nocturnal code.
This is the Art of the Hudson Valley on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. And this is, again, Chad Weckler, the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, and we're doing installation and performance artists, of which we have three in the studio today. We have Ryder Cooley, Michael Aspill, and Matthew Slatz. And I'll go to Ryder since we just listened to Flying. Talk a little bit about what's happening again at Silver Mine this weekend and what's going on.
Well, as I was saying before, the Flying song became the soundtrack, one of the songs for a performance I was doing a couple years ago called Animalia, which was about human-animal relations. It's kind of dark fairy tale piece. It had a bit about bees, colony collapse disorder, deer, a girl turns into a deer, very mythological. And the piece I'm doing this weekend is the sequel. It's called Exmalia. It's about extinction. Each song is about a different extinct animal, and I perform with taxidermy. So my taxidermy cast play the roles of extinct animals. And I also have some more human performers too, a band. And there's video projections and trapeze and lots of treats. So this Sunday it's at Silver Mine Arts in Connecticut, New Canaan, Connecticut at 5:00. And then it will be at MCLA Presents in North Adams on the 25th, which is a Wednesday. And that's at 7:30. And I'm always doing like a lot of little things in between.
You're everywhere.
The big things. So another thing coming up is with a local artist, Sarah Faulkner, who's a writer. She has a new book out called Animal Sanctuary. And we're doing a collaborative performative reading at Blue Stockings Books in Manhattan on the 10th in the evening. I can't remember exactly what time. It's like around probably 7 or something. So those are the main things I have coming up.
And if someone were to go to your website, do you have
There's
these
a website. It's CarolynRyderCooley.com. And you can find everything through there. You can find videos and other information.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And Michael, how do we get a hold of Michael?
Well, you can actually go to my website, which is michaelasbill.com. And my email address is there. That's a good way to get a hold of me, which is michaelasbill@yahoo.com. it's sadly a little incomplete. All that knife on mark training just hasn't sunk in all the way yet. But it's in progress like everything else. So that's, just the way it is, I guess. One of the other things I'm involved in, which I would love to just sort of like mention, is the gallery that I run with my friends Adam Snyder and Deborah DeGraffenried. It's called K-Mocha, and it's in Kingston on Abeel Street in the Rondout. And I'm really super proud to be a part of it. I think we put on great shows, and we give a lot of Hudson Valley artists an opportunity to do some things that maybe they wouldn't be able to do in other spaces.
And that's the Kingston Museum of Contemporary Art?
Yeah, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, as you might imagine. Yeah. It's pretty small. You know, one of the founders of that space, Adam Snyder, and I discovered that we had some things in common, including a love for organizations like the Museum of Jurassic Technology in Culver City. And, you know, so I think, and he had started something called the School of Refrigeration in Kingston, and just nonsense stuff. And I think that the Kingston Museum of Contemporary Art was born out of not that conversation, but that that type of interest. But anyway, we're very proud of our space, and I thought I would just say that we have a show opening this Saturday from 5 to 7. It's actually three photographers, a team, Johnny Scott and Eva, and I've been coached on pronouncing this. Let's see how I do. Momatyuk and Candace Feet, and their photographs of ice and, strangely, the Indian Ocean. So quite a lot of contrast there. We're enthusiastic about that, and hopefully some folks can come out and see what we do, and you can meet me there.
Okay, cool. And Matthew, definitely want to get in the promo for the Dead Hair Hour.
The Dead Hair Radio Hour. the Dead Hair Radio Hour is another radio show that I do. It goes biweekly, and it runs out of Vassar College. But you can check us out at deadhairradiohour.com. We've got podcasts of all our show there. That covers a lot of ground. You never know what the next week is going to be like on the Dead Hair Radio Hour. Pause. You can check out Pause at PauseLab, PauseLab.org. My website, MatthewSlatz.com. There's a project I have going on right now called Free Space, so FreeSpaceProject.org. There's an endless amount of websites that are running at the same time. So,
and what's next for Poughkeepsie?
Since we've got this really great little grant from the Arts Council, or the New York Council of the Arts, I should say, we are going to be organizing probably two or three projects this summer. One's going to be a community dinner, where we're going to put a tent up in a vacant lot down in downtown Poughkeepsie, and then invite residents who live in that two or three block area to come have dinner with us. And that's going to be with an artist. Her name's Tracy Candido. She's based in Brooklyn and does kind of food-based work. I'm going to be collaborating with an artist in Beacon. Her name is Jean Brennan, on a project called Follow My Lead, which looks to create mentorships with high school students. And then I think we're going to do another project with a writer, Kiese Lehman, as a faculty at Vassar, looking at barbershop culture in Poughkeepsie. One of the big criticisms of the city is like, why do we have so many barbershops? And that's because there are community centers for the African-American communities. Mm. So hopefully we'll do something with that.
It sounds like a very busy, happy new year for all three of you. It's getting off to, I think, a very good start. And I definitely want to let our listeners know that you can always go to wgxc.org/events. You will see, and that's something that everybody can submit an event. You know, definitely remind our three guests that you can do that. And always listen to WGXC. I do. I'm on once a month, the very first Thursday of every month, and I'm planning already some interesting programs, much like today has been very interesting. I'm sure I could do a few more hours with all three of you, an hour each, but we'll save that for another time. So I want to thank our listeners for listening to The Art of the Hudson Valley, and we will be having up next Radio Theater. It's coming up in just half a minute. Please stay tuned, keep listening, and create.
Chad, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you guys.
Thank you so much.